I am here partly for myself because it sounded like an interesting conference, and partly because I mentor multiple women from medical students to residents to junior faculty, and I thought I might learn some interesting things that I can share with others.
My name is Elzada Hasecic, and I'm a third-year medical student at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix. One of the reasons I wanted to attend is because I really believe in what FEMINEM stands for and how they empower women, especially in the medical field.
I love what the FIX conferences have done for my brain, and I kind of wanted to see what the Revive conference could do for my soul.
I'm at Revive this year to make some connections. I feel like I work alone so much. It's really nice to see what other women are doing and to make female connections.
Hello, listeners. Dara and Jenny let me do it again. I pitched a series. They said yes. Welcome to the FEMINEM podcast, the official podcast of FEMINEM, discussing all things FEM, a little bit of EM, and yes, everything in between. I'm Risa E. Lewis. I'm hosting the podcast live from Revive. Yes, that rhymes. A FEMINEM development and retreat in Scottsdale, Arizona. I am distinctly pleasured to be speaking with our guest. Her name is Kat Hurley. Kat, go ahead and say hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello. Let me tell you a little bit about Kat. Kat is going to be running a workshop I'm taking. I'm super excited about this. The name of the workshop is The Ins and Outs of Intermittent Fasting. Because, listeners, people are here at Revive to learn about themselves personally, to learn about themselves professionally. We asked many of our listeners why they were here, and a lot basically referred to these two parts of their lives, but they also said they want to develop, they want to move themselves to a new level, and part of moving themselves to a new level professionally is acknowledging that some of that move has to be personally. So first I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kat. Kat Hurley is the author of a book, I Think I'll Make It, A True Story of Lost and Found. I want to hear more about that. She's an inspirational storyteller, a health and lifestyle coach in Brooklyn, New York. Yay, Brooklyn. Kat holds a master's degree in education and taught high school for 7 years. She's a lifelong athlete, we do want to know which sports, a personal trainer, a group fitness instructor. Her mission? To enlist game changers. That's you, audience members. Kat Hurley will help you realize your greatest potential and know how to gift it to the world. I love it. Kat, take it away. Tell us about why you're here at Revive.
Well, I heard about this whole weekend from Dara, and I work with Dara periodically in Brooklyn, and I was asking her why I wasn't invited. So I basically invited myself.
Love it. Dara knows nothing about doing things like that, so I think that it probably rewarded immediate respect points, right?
Well, it did get me almost immediate invite, so it really worked. And I've come to find out that she does this all the time herself, so good way to get in with her.
And in terms of, let's start with your book.
Sure.
Okay. The title of your book, what does it mean? What should we know about it?
Well, it's actually funny that you bring it up because I just have a documentary that's coming out about the book. And in the documentary, you'll see a short clip of when I was a child. And it was, well, let me back up just a second. So my father murdered my mother when I was young. And I was the key witness. So I had to go to trial. And everything was being recorded via the media. And one of the questions that was asked after the trial was over, and after my father was convicted and I was ready to move on with my life, one of the reporters asked, do you think you'll be able to move on or move forward? And I said, at 8 years old, I kind of giggled and I said, I think I'll make it. And so something about that 8-year-old child has perpetuated this resilience throughout my life that has allowed me to overcome obstacles in such a way that I can't really explain. It's just that 8-year-old kid that somehow knew that I had the guts or the angels or something that was going to allow me to persevere. And so it's pretty much that message that I've wanted to share with other people my entire life. And I've tried to do that through my life coaching and then through my group fitness, through my personal fitness, and then now also through nutrition. And I've come to learn that it's all trifecta. It, you know, you can't have one without the other.
So I'm a believer that everybody becomes an emergency physician for a reason, and it's often some sort of telltale story that
sure.
is one where there is trauma, mm-hmm. drama, and that depending on how you react and how you integrate it into yourself and your life, you become quite resilient. So it sounds sure. like actually you had your own insight into yourself at a quite young age. It's pretty remarkable.
Well, it's kind of surreal looking back at those videotapes now, now that the documentary is coming out, because I really don't know where that came from. I've since have studied positive psychology, and I've learned that some people argue that there's a 50%, you know, happiness set point that we're sort of born with. It's hard to know one way or the other, but I mean, positive psychology, the term didn't even come about until the 1990s, so this is all still new science. But I know that I've seen my family really struggle, and many of them still carry around the victimhood that I allowed myself to work through. But as I describe in my book, I had this very kind of eat, pray, love sort of journey where I allowed myself the time and the space. I moved to Hawaii. I was there for a year, really not dating. Apart from everybody that I'd known and loved here on the East Coast. And so it gave me that space and time to really dive deep and to sort of internalize and figure out some of the things that I had never dealt with. And so I was able to deal with that victimhood and to look into spirituality and meditation and find ways to actually heal that I don't think that you can do in everyday life if you don't give yourself that time and that space.
And where did sports play a role?
Oh, gosh. You know, I really think that sports kind of chose me. Again, I had two older brothers, and so it was kind of like keep up or get out. And so I wanted nothing more than their attention. So I became just a little tomboy, and I would chase around my brothers. And so I played everything. My mom would, before she passed away, would take me to ballet, and my dad would take me to ice hockey. So I was always being pulled in two different directions. And I wanted to hang out with my brother, so I quickly learned ice hockey and lacrosse and skateboarding and skiing, and then later it became basketball and field hockey. I played four sports in high school, so part of that, I guess, the drive to just achieve was built into the resilience and everything that came out of sports.
Yeah. I want to make sure that at the end we talk about your documentary, because I think everybody should read your book, but also look for that documentary. But you're going to be giving a workshop that I'm taking. I'm really excited about it, intermittent fasting. So I really love learning and reading and speaking with people about health, all different kinds of health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, because, you know, there's some hot topics, hot terms like burnout and, you know, actually physicians have some of the highest rates of suicide compared to other professions and emergency medicine physicians, and not all of our listeners, not everybody that participates in FemineM and the FemineM podcast are emergency medicine, but a good majority of us are. We have some high rates of a lot of scary things like suicide, addiction, et cetera. So let's talk about fasting.
Sure. Well, a transition, I think, from the book, I should probably just plop this in if you don't mind. Talking about trauma, when I moved back from Hawaii, so where my book takes place is in Hawaii, and then I moved back to the East Coast, and I'm trying to figure out what it is I'm going to do with my life after having this really healing spiritual journey, and I decided that I want to write this book, and it had been suggested to me my whole life, like, oh, you have this really crazy story, you should write a book, but it was like one of those things, one-off things that people would say, and when I finally decided, yeah, I think I really do want to document this story, it was about a 2 or 3 year process to get everything down and then to get everything published. But I, after I finished the book and I'm getting ready to publish it, I start experiencing all this autoimmune stuff. I'd always been a healthy, strong athlete. I'd never had even a broken bone, never had anything, surgeries, anything to speak of health wise. And all of a sudden I'm at my most vulnerable state publishing this book. And I have this overwhelming autoimmune attack, basically, and I have eczema all over my body. And I was living in Baltimore at the time. Where I'm from Maryland. And I go to Johns Hopkins, and they're giving me steroids, and they're giving me ointments, and they're telling me that there's no association with food. At this point, I'd started to do a little bit of my health journey. I was already in fitness, but I wasn't quite well-versed just yet. And Johns Hopkins is giving me this ointment. They're just saying, just you're going to have eczema for the rest of your life. This is... So I start to dig a little deeper, thinking, okay, well, do I have an allergy? Do I have a sensitivity? What's going on? And then I start seeing herbalists. I start digging down that road. And it wasn't until I moved to Brooklyn, I'm literally getting ready to publish my book, and I work with this nutritionist, a functional nutritionist, who says, just out of curiosity, when did your mom die? And I said, she died when she was 35. And she said, isn't that strange to you that you're 35? And I said, well, wait, I've dealt with all this. That's what my book's about. I've healed. I've dealt with all this. And she said to me, your body holds trauma in a different way than your brain. And even though you may have dealt with it in your mind, you could still be holding something in your body, and it's coming out now. And I think that allowed me the acceptance to let my body do that, even as painful as it was. I mean, I joke that from my tits to my toes, I had rashes all over my body. I was swollen. I was oozing. I was disgusting. I could barely even do yoga. My legs were swollen. I was taking oatmeal baths every night. But what came of it was this realization that when I came on the other side of this autoimmune was that I also need to help people with this. So I realized that these components are not separate. I was teaching fitness, and yet I knew a little bit about nutrition, and I knew a little bit about the psychology stuff, but it was like, I need to know more, because you can't just teach one. I mean, this is all, you know, we're three-dimensional human beings. We're multifaceted. And so that's when I dug deeper into the psychology, became a life coach. That's when I dug deeper into nutrition, became a health coach, because it was just like, oh, I can't do one without the other.
Yeah.
So that's where we come into the fasting. So sorry for that. I had to backpedal to give you a little bit of...
No, this is fantastic.
Yeah, just a framework of where it all came from. So having been on the other side of autoimmune, I've been eating really healthy for many, many years, but I found that I was overeating. In fact, I always joke that I traded just one addiction for the other. When I was younger, I was... you know, sort of drinking and drugging and self-medicating my way through healing from trauma. And then when I got older and quote unquote healthier, I was eating really healthy food and exercising a lot, but probably on an addictive level on both of those. The endorphins I got from running or working out were one side of the addiction. And then probably the eating healthy, I was in sugar carb craving, even healthy carbs, but just a lot of food. So I joke that I would often have like the caloric intake of like Michael Phelps. When I was in Hawaii, I was surfing 2 or 3 hours a day, and then I was working in a gym and working out 2 or 3 hours a day. So I was very fit looking, but I would say that that was also feeding into what would later become this autoimmune meltdown. So I would call that many years of silent inflammation. So I appeared really healthy on the outside, but my body was getting more and more inflamed on the inside, which ended up being this autoimmune. So I came to find intermittent fasting just in the last few years. And the fasting, what I found, gave me a freedom from this addiction of what was this sugar carb dependency, and then also this over-exercising to balance out the amount that I was eating. So I'll let you jump in if you have a question.
Yeah, so, you know, I've done a lot of reading about all different sort of diets. I've seen plenty of fads. I grew up in a household where, you know, there was always the du jour diet that people were trying. And a lot of it did not make sense to me. And, you know, some people say everything in moderation, including moderation. You know, you look at what happens in Europe, you look at what happens in Asia, you look at trends. And I sort of have done reading, and also, you know, there's some certain things that make sense. So I've read some of Michael Pollan's stuff, The Omnivore's Dilemma, mm-hmm. and, you know, some of his later books that talk about, you know, food should spoil. Yeah. And that, you know, if you can't pronounce the ingredients on the back of a package, and or if there's more than a certain number of ingredients, you should question it. Yeah. And so there's certain things that, like, yeah, that just makes sense. Yeah, that just makes sense. And so when it comes to my limited reading of fasting, there's certain things that kind of make sense. So I have friends that have really subscribed to the, like, 3 days, 4 days, like sort of almost a formula or something you have to write on your calendar that seems quite difficult to follow. I have another friend that said, oh, it's just easy. I look at what time I eat dinner, and if that's, I finish at 7:30, I just fast for 12 hours. I don't eat again until 7:30, and then I don't have to keep track of anything. I was like, wow, that sounds pretty simple. And, you know, there is this element, just like our minds and our brains need to rest, our bodies need to rest, and that's even from food. And, you know, when we break down the food, the word break breakfast, it's break fast, break the fast. So, like, there's certain things that are like, yeah, that makes so much sense. So I'm interested in, you know, which aspects of fasting you actually think are beneficial, not just to you personally, but just generally for people that are looking to be healthier. And what of these different patterns, routines, do you think are for reals versus what's just sort of trend that's going to go off, kind of like when people were going really heavy duty with the diet where they're eating lots and lots of meat and lots of fat and no carbs.
Atkins, yeah.
Yeah, the Atkins, which I was like, this can't be good. And sure enough, like, this is not good. So, you know, what have you found to be tried and true and you think something that's going to be sustainable regarding fasting?
So we expend about 30% of our energy through digestion alone. At the rate that I was eating before, I looked great on the outside, but the toll it takes on the body to process that much food, hormonally, just all the processes that go through the body, it's actually, you can send yourself into early aging. So there's so many benefits to fasting, one being just the lower inflammation of not having to digest that many calories and that many different things throughout the course of the day. Also, I absolutely agree with you. It should be as simple as, I agree with one of your friends. It should be simple. And I would suggest that you start very, very simple. I would suggest just a simple 12-hour fast. Stop eating at 7, eat breakfast at 7. Stop eating dinner at 7 p.m. and eat breakfast at 7 a.m. or 8 p.m. or 8 a.m. A lot of the people, though, that I did a pre-questionnaire for this event, I wanted to ask, because I have so many ER doctors that are at this conference, was that their schedules are often quite different.
Completely.
But that is the benefit, I would say, of the intermittent fasting as opposed to some of these other strict schedules, is that what we're looking for is what I call, or what has been termed, metabolic flexibility. So in that metabolic flexibility, which is more in tune to what I imagine they're describing with the primal human beings, was that we never knew when food was coming in. Part of the issue of having everything 24/7 as we do in New York, I don't know about where you are, but in New York 24/7, we can get pretty much whatever we want, whether it's, you know, a pineapple in the middle of winter or, you know, some of these things that were meant to literally fatten us up for the winter famine. And now we can eat fruit all year round, pretty much wherever we are in the US, especially, mostly in the Western world. And so cooling down that system for 12 hours, 13, 14, sometimes up to 16 or 17 hours a day, you can just imagine what you can do with 30% more energy to lower your inflammation, or you can even get into cell autophagy, cleaning up your system. It also is helpful towards better sleep. There's just so many advantages, I think, to resting one of the systems of your body.
And that's something I hear from a lot of people that participate in intermittent fasting, that actually they get more energy. I think a lot of people think, oh my gosh, that's going to drain me. I'm not going to have food. I'm not going to have energy. But many people I speak with say that they actually are so much more energetic after their fast.
So what your body does is it produces ketones, and ketones can pass the blood-brain barrier. And ketones are said to burn more cleanly than sugar carbs that we're used to. Sugar carbs, the analogy that they use is it's kind of like kindling on a fire. Sugar and carbs is going to be like your smoky kindling. So you're going to have to feed it often, and it's going to be smoky and kind of dirty fuel. Whereas the ketones, they describe more like a big log on the fire. It's going to be more of a slow burn. So you'll have what I feel like is a little bit, it's almost like you just had like a nice coffee or something. It's without the jitters. Like there's just, for instance, I'm a personal trainer, and oftentimes I have to count the reps, and a lot of what I do is, and I'm sure you doctors as well could understand this, a lot of what you do is very repetitive, and so you're often thinking about or doing two or three things at one time, and sometimes I lose my count on the reps, or I'm talking to a client, but I realize when I'm in ketosis, I am sharp on all those edges, and I don't have a problem keeping track. I can do two or three things at once and not have any problem.
All right. So what I want to do is play a little game.
Sure.
Well, it's a game. It's not really a game. I have all these thoughts and all these theories, and I'd love your input on these different aspects of diet, eating, fasting. So I'll just say sort of the term or the word, and you can just react according to your thoughts on this and where it should or should not play a role in people's dietary lives, okay?
Okay.
So we'll start easy. Number one. Sugar.
Oof. Sugar, sleep, and stress. They are all inflammatory. So when we can lower sugar, increase sleep, and lower stress, then you're really setting yourself up for a way better position. Because inflammation is the composition of all chronic disease.
High fructose corn syrup.
Oh, boo. So, you vote with your wallet, and this could be a whole nother podcast in itself, but the first things that got me eating cleanly, this was years ago, probably early 2000s, was I just found out about high fructose corn syrup and how it was being hidden in everything, and it made me so angry that I just started refusing to buy things like ketchup or condiments are loaded with this junk. And now I feel that way about trans fats, and there's so many other things that are hiding in our ingredients. But, I mean, these companies are just cutting corners in every possible way to get you to buy something that they have tricked you into buying. And it makes me so angry that I will not give them my money. I won't.
Fast food.
Oof. Well, there are becoming better fast foods. So I have to travel often from New York down to Maryland to see my family. And there is nothing from New York to Maryland on the New Jersey Turnpike except for a Chipotle. So that will be one that I would stop in. That's a decent fast food. There's a few others. Trying to think if I can shout out a couple more because there are more coming out. Like Sweetgreens. I'm trying to think. I'm a big proponent of typing in on Google, farm to table, dot, 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 or finding, a trusted grocery store, a Whole Foods, whatever you can get to, wherever you're going, you can use your Google to help you get something quickly, but get something healthy.
Dairy.
Dairy is tricky. I find, and really in all of this, you kind of have to become your own guru. For me, cow's milk dairy, I will get acne. It's just like, it will happen. And right now I'm actually dealing with it because I've been binging a little bit on cheese lately. But what I have found instead for me is I can do goat milk and I can do sheep's milk. So it has something to do with the lactose and the casein. So I can't remember which, because I'm still on Brooklyn time and it's a little late here, which one is which, but I'm either casein or lactose. Not intolerant, but definitely sensitive.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about, if you were to point to some of the causes of the obesity trends that we see in the U.S.?
Sugar and carbs.
Yeah. What do you think, if people are saying, okay, great, no sugar, no carbs, but, how do I know what's in there? Because I think one of the things that people don't realize is sugar is hidden, not just high fructose corn syrup being hidden, but sugar is in everything. The reason things taste good when we go out to restaurants is usually sugar, salt, and butter, sugar, salt, and butter, sugar, salt, and butter.
Right.
So if people are trying to figure out one thing to cut, one thing to start on this movement towards health and maybe intermittent fasting, are there sort of top three things, if they're in your diet, you can try to cut?
Well, that was loaded. You made me think about a bunch of things when you were saying that. So let me go back. Well, first of all, the no fat, high carb craze that was my whole college career made us all addicted to sugar, as far as I'm concerned. Because when they took out the fat, they had to put in sugar to make it taste good. And there's a lot of carb confusion out there. What is carbs? One of the things I would suggest that we're going to talk about tomorrow in my workshop is really getting to know your macronutrients and knowing what is what. I mean, there were times when I first started intermittent fasting or first started playing around with ketosis, and I would have to Google how many carbs are there in a handful of almonds, how many carbs are there in a handful of strawberries, and really getting to know what was what. And it's laborious and it's kind of annoying at first. And there, I'm sure there's apps that make it a little bit easier. But that was the way that kind of allowed me to see what was worth eating and what wasn't, if I was really trying to be mindful about keeping my carb count low. Also, carbs aren't just bread and pasta. There's carbs in everything, and we need carbs. There's carbs in carrots. There's carbs in, like I mentioned, fruit. There's carbs in so many things that are delicious and beneficial for you. What we're talking about are these anti-nutrients. It's actually the proteins that are found in these grains that are so difficult to break down. Even beans can be difficult to break down. I mean, that's why we end up with bloating and gas. And these things aren't normal. Things that we've just like have written off in our everyday discomfort as being normal. And then we just take another pill or we take some more something to soothe it. It's like, well, instead of taking a pill to soothe it or taking some sort of ointment to rub, like, what is it that's making us not feel good? And that's going to be different for everybody. It can get complex because if you look at people, perhaps in the Eastern world, they might be able to break down rice a little bit better. We have enzymes within our guts, and they might have better enzymes to break down rice that we don't have here in the Western world. So it's sometimes can be a little bit more complicated. Also, too, how hardcore of an athlete are you? You might need more carbohydrates. But for most of us that are just doing regular day-to-day exercise and, just regular life, I mean, up to about 100 grams of carbs is all we need in the course of the day. And ketosis is way below that, 50 or below.
I've seen a lot of people take to a vegan diet, plant-based fats, whole foods. One of the challenges sometimes with vegan diets is when you read the ingredients, you can't pronounce those either. And there's 20,000, like, is it sometimes worse to go vegan where you actually aren't using, natural ingredients versus, again, plant-based, avoiding animal fats, et cetera?
So I was a vegan just before my huge autoimmune flare up. You have to remember too, these carbs are processed as sugar. So when we're eating plates full of pasta and plates full of rice, like I was as a vegan, or maybe even a lot of bread, I was, again, feeding that silent inflammation. So, you know, this whole thing of gut health, microbiota that has come about, that they're being talked about over and over again, is still fairly new science. Dr. Perlmutter wrote, I think it was Grain Brain, and then 5 years later had to rewrite the entire book because the science is still just coming out. But I really have a hard time with the vegan diet, as much as it was really important to me in the time where I had developed this level of spirituality, and I thought that, you know, we don't need to eat animals, and I was really in this like Buddhist place where I don't want to harm another animal. And then I ended up with this huge autoimmune flare up where I, you know, was get to a really scary place. I had brain fog and I, you know, had all this discomfort. And what I started craving was goat milk kefir, of all things. And I started like drinking like 22 ounces of this stuff a day. And my body was like, as soon as I had like my first taste of it, I just couldn't stop drinking it. So it was like my body was screaming, like, you need this. And then after that, I started doing bone broth. Again, I was working with this nutritionist at the time, and she was helping me through it. She was very aware of sometimes people have all different reasons why they don't eat meat. And for me, it was a spiritual thing. And so it was a really difficult transition to come back. But once I did, and once I realized my body was really craving this animal fat that I'd missed for so long, I mean, the animal fat, I think, is what helped heal my gut, which would allow me to actually heal. I'm on no medication anymore. And it was at the point where I had what's called leaky gut, where I had all these proteins that were leaching out into the bloodstream, and it was causing allergic react. Well, they don't call it allergy because it's not anaphylactic. So it would be, since I'm talking to doctors, I have to be very specific, a sensitivity. So I had a sensitivity to, at one point, it was soy and wheat and dairy and almonds and eggs and garlic. All those things were leaking out of my system into my bloodstream and sending my body into high alert. So now I can eat all those things. Well, I still avoid dairy, like I mentioned, and bread. But everything else I can eat without any problem.
That's great.
So you can absolutely heal yourself with food.
Yeah.
100%.
If you wanted to teach someone more, and they're not going to say they can't attend your session or hire you as a coach, where would you tell people to go if they want to read more?
Well, I have a website, kathurleycoaching.com. You're certainly welcome to come there. I'm always open to any questions. You can also find me on Instagram, and I'm always open to questions there as well. I just want to leave with three things I think would be really important to start looking at. I'm going back to that sugar, sleep, and stress, because that is like number one is for inflammation. Number two, I would like you to start looking at microbiome. So start cleaning up the things that you're bringing into your daily routine. Because remember, these things compound over time. So even when we're making these little slip-ups here or little slip-ups there, compounded over time, this can change the actual microbiota in our gut. And remember, this controls your cravings. This is your immune system. This is a lot of things that are going on in your gut. So I would be checking out anything that has to do with gut health there. And the third thing is talking about this concept of metabolic flexibility. I really want there to be less stress around this food. I just think that when we're counting calories, when we're on an app, we're getting away from the intuition that is what I believe eating should be. I believe that we really should be eating when we're hungry and trying to get back to eating cleaner foods, more macronutrients, so that your body can really tell you when it's full and that you're living in more harmony with your body that way.
That's great. Those are the three things. Actually, great. I was going to ask you to leave our audience with some pearls, which you did. Where can we find your book, and where should we look for your documentary?
So my book is on Amazon, and the documentary is actually going to make its first debut at a film festival in New Mexico in just a few days, February 14th, Valentine's Day. And then we're hoping to be in the Brooklyn Film Festival, possibly upcoming, and we're shopping around to a couple more film festivals. After that, then we're going to probably open it up on some sort of digital device, but I'm not sure where just yet.
And the title we should look for?
It's also I Think I'll Make It.
Great. I Think I'll Make It. Kat Hurley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Podcasting live from Revive in Scottsdale, Arizona. Thank you. We look forward to speaking with more of our workshop leaders soon.
Thanks so much.